This is the Saxo Market Call, the daily financial markets podcast, across asset classes and around the world.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Tuesday, 11th of July, 2023. Equity markets, not terribly exciting. We had a recovery overnight in Asia, a little bit of a bounce from the lows yesterday in the U.S. The recovery in Asia, mostly about China moving on measures to sort of prop up the property market, discussion of an extension of financing there, and this helped to trigger some consolidation, for example, dollar versus renminbi. But we're a bit skeptical on the ability of China to really move the needle on this. This is probably more about damage control in the property sector. So we're wondering if this will have a durable impact. Bigger news or bigger moves overnight were in the Japanese yen, which really continues to correct to the strong side pretty much across the board and spreading a little bit more outside of just the dollar yen focus as well today in Europe. I'll talk more about that on the FX side of things. But we have a couple things to talk about here in stocks today, Peter. One is, we stopped the selling here, so we're waiting. I guess the next thing we're waiting for is CPI, but really it's the earnings season. And then there's this NASDAQ 100 rebalancing story. So I'll let you pick up the narrative where you care to.
Yeah, I was just about to say, I think you're skipping ahead a little bit too quickly here, because I think it's worth mentioning the European equity market, because we are up this morning for the third straight session, so pretty sizable rebound. And it's come off those news from China with the stimulus or the prop up of that real estate sector. But I think it underscores the point that we have tried to be making on this podcast, that a lot of the weakness we're seeing in European equity markets lately has been related to this lack of rebound in China. China and Europe are their two largest trading partners together. So it's more important for Europe that China gets into gear than U.S. Increases their growth rate a little bit. So, and what we see in Europe is that the weakness is predominantly in the manufacturing and in industrial production area of the economy, which is linked to the Chinese economy. So, it's worth tracking. And we'll get back to the European equity market, because there's a lot of positive news coming out this morning, left, right, and center. And talking about what yesterday's session, you can see on the theme baskets overview there that on slide two, the bubble stocks were again some of the strong movers there: semiconductors, cybersecurity. So very much the technology focus, and that's a segue into that Nasdaq 100 that you talked about, John. So the Nasdaq 100 index, which is the leading benchmark index for technology stocks in the U.S., the Nasdaq Stock Exchange announced yesterday that it's going to carry out what is called a special rebalancing. And it's pretty clear in their methodology paper, which they also link to, that in the case that you get an over-concentration in the index, such a special rebalancing event will take place. And that is what we have now. So on the July 14th, we will get the new index weight for the Nasdaq 100. And those will be effective by July the 24th. So essentially, you'll have 5 trading days for ETFs, other types of agents in the financial markets that are tracking this index, will have to get to those new target weights. I will write a piece today where I'll play around with the numbers, because you can reverse engineer. So in order to get back to a concentration level that is similar to what we had 5 years ago, let's play with that. We can calculate backwards and say what is the aggregate index weight that needs to be rebalanced. And I am pretty sure, because the exchange obviously is not stupid, that they have chosen a time period where it will be able to be absorbed pretty easily in the daily trading flow. And also because the daily trading volume in these stocks in particular, those that are the most concentrated, is pretty heavy. Look at the Microsoft and Apple, just for some flavor here. So 25% of the index is Microsoft and Apple, those two together. That's pretty sizable. So I think we're going to look for a couple of percentage point here that will be reduced. And then staying with equities before we go back to other topics. I've been talking to journalists past couple of weeks, and again yesterday, a big institutional investor magazine out of the Netherlands, and I was asked about our outlook and what we thought about monetary policies, inflation, and what our views were on the different equity markets. And I said it was very difficult to be overweight the U.S. equity market, given it's so expensive relative to everything else. And this morning, the FT has this article: hedge funds slash bets on U.S. after rally and pivot to Europe. And that headline is driven by a sell side note from Goldman that is using their own prime brokerage data, suggesting where you know their biggest hedge fund customers are moving their assets and bets. And I've put in a valuation C score, which is measuring the C score between European equities and US equities. We are on slide 4, by the way, on the 12 months forward EV to EBITDA. And here you can see we are actually 2 standard deviations below. So in other words, the discount is pretty significant for European equities relative to the US. And in normal language, they're not statistical language, it's a 30% discount relative to US equities.
Yeah, and there was a Bloomberg article I came across regarding this NASDAQ 100 rebalancing, where they point out on July 3rd, so the 6th largest companies in the NASDAQ 100, Microsoft, Apple, Alphabet, NVIDIA, Amazon, and Tesla, saw their combined weight of 50.9%. And that there was some NASDAQ methodology paper saying the rebalancing may reduce it to 40%. So the math can be very specific on that level. It just seems to me as there's a lot of holding. You know, you talk about the volumes, but there are a lot of holdings of these stocks and all manner of ETFs and across all kinds of funds. And if you have to balance to the index, then you just wonder how does that sort of all shake out. So it'd be very interesting to see if this causes a few disruptions, especially in those. Yeah, key names there.
Exactly, but I think the headlines were already flying yesterday, and I don't think there are a lot of institutional investors here that are shaking their hands. It's really retail investors that might be panicking over this, and that's why I actually think it's very important for me to come out with a piece, because the fundamentals, the equity valuation of a company, just like a stock split, it doesn't change from this thing. But you're right, there could be...
Yeah, but it's just sheer exposure and rebalancing. It has nothing to do with fundamentals. It's just...
Exactly. But again, the exchange, of course, is well aware of the exposure to the index from ETFs. So I'm pretty sure they... Or at least I will change my... I'll change my view on the NASDAQ if they have set 5 days and it turns out to be too little to carry out the rebalancing. Mm.
And exchange is clearly not concerned about liquidity issues. 24th of July, come on, it's right getting into the middle of the summer period. So, but clearly not a concern for them.
Sure. But for relative performance, it could be an interesting process to watch, obviously. It could also mean that it's just an internal thing. So these stocks go down, these other stocks go up. That could be another effect of all this. Anyway, let's move swiftly along here. Again, the volatility-wise, the asset getting the most attention here is in FX, and that's the yen. And you can see the big correction we're still on here in dollar yen on slide 4. It went even lower. And as I said, into early European hours today, we've seen the yen strength spreading more against the euro and sterling. And I would argue, I think a lot of what is driving this, yes, we saw U.S. yields easing back yesterday. That is a help for the Japanese yen, all things being equal. But the if a lot of this is driven by the positioning angle, which I think to a large degree it is, then there are other very extended positioning. We talked about that as well. The Mexican peso, a huge long position. Sterling, at the longest positioning we've seen, at least in the U.S. futures market in many years, or matching basically the long-term highs positioning-wise on the long side. So curious to see if this sort of spreads around the joint. Yes, the first instinct is to focus on dollar yen. And there was a bit of extra focus on the dollar, I think, from that Chinese story supporting the renminbi, which has been on a very persistent downtrend versus the U.S. dollar. But if the positioning is the focus, there's a broadening risk. And as well, we have to remember, we do have a U.S. CPI print up tomorrow, so we could see a bit of two-way volatility, at least ahead of that number. And then we'll see how the market reacts and if the number comes in as soft is as expected, especially on the headline with that 3.1% expected there. All right, let's move on to gold, because we have seen a decent enough rebound in gold here to start, warranting some attention. So I suppose, though, clearly that's going to depend on what yields and the dollar are doing after the CPI release tomorrow.
Yes, absolutely. I think the market, is trying to find some energy, but it's still struggling a bit. But I just put in it today and on slide 6, just to highlight that quite often what we see with gold, that you really have to almost start hating it before it turns around. And what we have seen the past month, we're looking at ETF flows, is that both in European and US-based ETF in gold, some of the major ones, they've seen more than $2 billion of outflows. And it's basically been happening at a time where the market has been consolidating and finding support around that 1900 level. So let's see where it takes us. We're above the 21-day moving average. If we close above that level, that's 1928. 8 current money. That would be the first close above since March. So that normally would signal some fresh momentum coming back into the market. But that 1939, just keep an eye on that as well. Quite a lot of traffic around that area. So if we can make it above that, then just from positioning, we could potentially see some additional momentum buying coming into the market. But the big one is obviously tomorrow's CPI number for further guidance.
Yeah, and actually, I forgot to mention on the FX side of things, it did bring sterling into the picture, but we did get some important data this morning out of the UK. The claims number picking up in June quite a bit more than was expected, plus 20-something K, and the payrolls number also actually slightly falling there. But I think the market initial focus, and we saw sterling sprinting above 129 versus the US dollar, was on that May wages data point at 7.3%, matching the high from April. And that's essentially the highest we've seen. There was one month that was slightly higher just after the pandemic distortions there. But 7.3% yearly wage growth, it's going to be hard to get to a 2% inflation target. Bailey was out yesterday saying he's very convinced that inflation is going to come down aggressively this year. But we've seen these high for the cycle prints in core inflation recently. I think the interesting thing here is if you just look at what happened to UK front-end yields, and it actually fell and after this data point. So I wonder if this sterling rally can sustain strongly relative to the rest of the market if those yields continue to ease lower. But then back to your commodity space, Ola, one thing that is going to affect inflation in the pipeline will be the oil price. We've kind of edged into some interesting areas, but we need some more momentum to break something here, don't we?
Yeah, exactly. We're still range bound. We've been range bound within a $6-$7 range now for the past couple of months, but we've been trying that to test that 78.50, 78, 75 area now for the past couple of days. And it seems like we're getting a little bit of strength back into the market. Speculators are cutting back their short positions. We're seeing new longs coming into the market. Saudi Arabia's cut production. That will have an impact on supply this month. And at the same time, I think it's also key is just to watch the oil market reports coming out this week. We're starting with the EIA today with the short-term energy outlook, steel, and then following follow-up on Thursday by oil market report from the IEA and OPEC. And I just put that small insert on slide 7, just highlighting these three organizations' expectations for demand growth. And this is really where we got a major discrepancy. The market simply does not believe that we will see the demand growth to the tune of 2 million plus barrels this year, especially considering that the bulk of that has been priced in to occur over the coming months. So really, we'll be looking out for the OMI reports for maybe a downgrade. And if not, if they still see this robust recovery in demand, then yeah, maybe we have some wings in the oil market and we could start challenging back into the 80s. So interesting week ahead.
All right. And Peter, now that we're getting within a few days of earnings season, not there yet, and you've got some other stocks to focus on in the meantime here.
Yeah, there's a lot of focus in Europe this morning. SAAB, which is the Swedish defense, aerospace and defense companies, that, you know, those shares are up 3%. Obviously on the back of Turkey's that has accepted Sweden's bid for NATO membership. And you can see the share price there, a five-year chart on slide 8. A pretty dramatic move since the war started in Ukraine. And you know, with that inclusion in NATO, you know, the Swedish defense industry, Finland has recently been adopted into NATO as well. Both countries have a pretty sizable defense industry and capabilities in that arena. So that will potentially give them more orders going forward inside the NATO framework, especially as NATO is really building up its capabilities and a large standing army there, or emergency army, as they call it. A Nordic Semiconductor. The initial read was actually that it was bad. So the stock there, it's a Norwegian-based company, was down. But better than expected, both revenue and operating income in Q2. I think it was the initial readout from that guidance on revenue that disappointed the market. It's initially sending the stock down, but then the growth margin guidance were actually better than expected, and that actually suddenly lifted the share price, and we were up 6% last time I checked. Tryg, which is the first financial company to report here in Europe. It's an insurance company, property insurance company. Shares are down almost 5%. Their technical result, which is basically the growth premiums that you earn on your own account minus the claims, minus your operating expenses, and then plus some net technical income that can be booked from your investment portfolio, that figure was down 13% compared to a year ago. So that's a pretty ugly figure right there from Tryg. And well, not a good lead into the financials that are going to report on Friday with Wells Fargo, JP Morgan Chase, and Citigroup. But I know those are banks, not insurance companies. But yeah, let's hope that those three banks will deliver something that is better than what we just saw from Trick.
All right, I think we've flogged that earnings outlook for Thursday and Friday pretty thoroughly. Anything you want to mention before I head to the macro calendar?
Okay.
Let's have a look at the macro calendar. A couple of things coming up here. We have the Treasury auctions starting today, kicking off with the 3-year. Again, given that we started touching highs for the cycle for this recent part of the cycle, out the curve, a bit interesting there, more so than usual. But it is leading into tomorrow's U.S. CPI report that we're looking for some triggers for either relief that inflation is beginning to cool or something in line, and then we're left our own devices. Or, of course, the bigger and more volatile, I think, scenario would be a hotter-than-expected core inflation print out of the U.S. In the meantime, we have an RBNZ tonight. I don't think they're bringing any surprises there. We have a Q2 CPI report in a week that is more important for New Zealand. There's nothing priced into the next couple of central bank meetings there because they're quicker and earlier in getting their rate to a reasonable level, 5.5%. Bank of Canada, they should go to 5%. I don't know why the market is in doubt. I mean, that we had them restarting their hiking cycle. We saw a crazy strong June employment data out of Canada. Why not just bring it to around 5% and then do a let's see meeting tomorrow? That would be my scenario there. We've seen some hawkish Fed speakers, and the Fed's wall is probably the highest profile speaker out this week, maybe getting more of a sense on where the Fed is on inflation. All right, I think that is a wrap for today. We'll see where things stand tomorrow and with our next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.